The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all.
You can see the writing on the pavement. Young kids are growing up in basements. Online, a whole new generation. I'ma make mine, so you better go take it. Always they need a new replacement. Decentralized, can't contain it. We're changing lives, yeah, upgrading. Call it suicide if they don't degenerate.
What keeps you up at night?
Let's try that again. All right. What does keep you? What keeps you up at night, Roddy Adams? It's the Whiskey Rebellion, and I am your host, the mandated reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And God damn it, it was so nice. We did it twice, ladies and gentlemen. Ronnie Adams, he's back with me on the Whiskey Rebellion. How do you do, Ronnie Adams, of the Miscreants and Miscreants, Misfits and Miscreants?
I'm Peach King Jelly Bean. Wow, that was dumb. I'm doing well. I'm excited to talk about WrestleMania. I think we need to make this a semi-regular thing.
Which part?
On the Whiskey Rebellion. Me and you.
Me and you just jabbering around wrestling.
Just jabbering around. Well, about anything, you know. Honestly, because I mean, I think the world needs to know what we think about stuff and how we feel. And you know, because that's important, how I feel.
The Whiskey Rebellion has definitely had its fair share of open topics with an opportunity for big meaty men who slap meat to share how they feel. And Ronnie, we are definitely here to talk about big meaty men slapping meat. Take a drink every time I say that. You will be blackout drunk by the end of this podcast.
I don't think I have enough for that.
I've got a bottle of Conor McGregor's Proper 12 in the trunk of my car that a pretty young blonde gave me after I gave her a ride home from ministry. And it's still rattling around in my trunk, man. We can go get it. We can go shot for shot. I'm going to go shot for shot. I'm going to go punch for punch.
The thing about it is I was talking about, you know, what's in the bottle and willpower. because you're going to be saying that a lot, and I like it.
So if you have comments here, we can put them on the board, and I don't know if this person knew that or not when she said this, but she says, I like big, meaty men, and we like you.
We do like you.
All right. So we are talking WrestleMania weekend. WrestleMania 40 had its night one and night two this past weekend, plus the Hall of Fame. I also watched NXT. I watched the last little bit of NXT. I watched Trick Williams versus Napoleon Dynamite, whatever the hell his name is. what's his name, Ronnie?
I didn't watch NXT.
Oh, okay. I only watched that match, though. No, I watched the girls, too.
I like NXT. I just didn't get to watch it.
Okay. Let's start off with this, because Ronnie Adams is here from the Screaming Boy podcast, and he is from the hills of West Virginia, where God lives.
West by God.
So I spent the first part of WrestleMania weekend, Saturday morning, with my children, who I am raising under the eyes of God, and we watched Effie's Big Gay Brunch, number nine, baby. I could see your aneurysm. Can I tell you how my son had the line of the weekend regarding professional wrestling?
What do you say?
Because him, Bonus Kid, and Lily watched Effie's Big Gay Brunch number 9 with me. And then Seth Rollins later that night comes out in that like gold lame robe with the Project Runway poof on his shoulder. And my son goes, that outfit is gayer than anything we saw this afternoon. And I gave him an award. I was like, well done, you've won the weekend, son.
Did you buy him a car or anything? I mean, because that's what he deserves for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is incredible.
Jonas is a good boy.
He's got some good lines, man. I have to admit. He comes off with some stuff. I especially like it when you're on TikTok with him and you have to constantly tell him, don't look at the camera, son. you're talking to your grandfather, not the camera.
Yes, it's very unnatural. So tell me in vascular detail all of your thoughts about Effie's big gay brunch.
I don't know about it. I know it's a thing because of you.
Right. Oh, yeah, because I talk about it incessantly.
Incessantly. It's just, that's the only thing, I mean, that's the only reason that I know about it. I'm not gay, and I don't do brunch, so I have no reason to watch it.
That's fair. So, actually, Bonus Kid had the second line of the night. So the Effie's Big Gay Brunch opened up. Those of you that are watching, it's like, do they ever talk about WWE? We're going to get to it, I promise.
Yeah, well,
it is. So Effie is the premier independent homosexual wrestler on the circuit right now. And he has an event, Effie's Big Gay Brunch, that is part of Game Changer Wrestling. Game Changer Wrestling is kind of like the new ECW.
But yeah.
Worse?
Is that what you said?
Worse, yes. And WrestleMania weekend, they allow a lot of the guys on their roster to kind of host their own signature events. Some of them are showcases of a certain type of wrestler. So, like, For the Culture showcases African-American wrestlers. Effie's Big Gay Brunch showcases LGBTQI wrestlers. Mm-hmm. Joey Janela showcases shitty wrestlers, etc. Joey Janela's Spring Break, baby. I think Nick Gage had one last year called Planet Death, which was awesome.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah, it totally does. So so he's done 9 of these so far because he's done them outside of WrestleMania weekend, which is when they normally do it. So, like, wrestling comes to town, and so does every other independent wrestling league because that's where the money is. Right. But GCW does well enough that they can kind of host shows outside of WrestleMania weekend. And so Effie's done it. And actually, Effie had a show here in Tampa not that long ago. Which my son was pissed we didn't go to. He was like, are you telling me? But by the way, when I took my kids to go see midget wrestling last October, I got us all Effie shirts. I got my daughter the one that says Smash the Patriarchy. I have one that says wrestling is gay, because it is. And my son's got one that says Kill Effie with brass knucks on it. It was great.
Wow.
Okay. That all tracks for you?
I have nothing to say because it all very much tracks.
That's a very rattled thing. Anyway, so we can move on with this before we lose the entire audience. So Patton Oswalt has this bit where, you know, the reason why some people are against gay marriage is because, quote, they don't want to see two guys arguing about hinges like, quote, me and my dumpy wife do. I need to see homosexuals at a cock sock on a spangly float because I need singing You Make Me Feel Mighty Real because I need magic in my life. And so Bonus Kid, God's honest truth, hand in my heart, I love this kid. The first match starts and one Asian fella comes out and he's got, like, you know, angel wings on and he's looking fabulous. Oh. And two other guys come out and, like, one looks like Lamar from, you know, Revenge of the Nerds. And then a fourth guy comes out, he just looks like a dude. And the Bonus Kid is now aggravated. And I'll tell you why, Ronnie. Do you want to know why?
Absolutely.
Not gay enough for Bonus Kid. He was like, I swear to God, he was this freaking 12-year-old kid. Was just like, why is he, like, he looks too straight to be gay. What's up with that? And he's going on and on about this. And I'm like, what's the matter, boy? Do you not have enough magic in your life to see just regular guys that happen to also be homosexual? Do you need them? And I go do the Patton Oswalt thing. And he looks at me. He was like, shut up. All right. Unless we're talking vascular detail about Effie's Big Gay Brunch, let's talk about
WrestleMania, please.
Have you ever been to a WrestleMania live? Because I have.
No. You haven't? Not yet. Maybe one day. You never know.
Really?
Yeah.
If it, come, Have you seen any of the big events like SummerSlam or Royal Rumble?
No, I've never been to a. I don't think I've ever been to a pay-per-view. I've been to, you know, house shows. I've been to SmackDown. I've been to Raw. I've been to.
Okay.
I went to Nitro back in the day.
When did you? Which, what was like the big thing at Nitro that night?
Was Flair.
Anything? Okay.
Yeah.
Please tell me it was Please tell me it was the night that he got fired and or quit.
No. The thing that the thing that sticks out to me the most is Johnny the Bull broke his tailbone.
I remember that night.
By doing a springboard leg drop to the outside.
Dumbass. Yeah. I've been to two Nitros. I was there when Goldberg beat Hogan in the Georgia Dome.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Me and Jupac took a ride down. Yep, that's his name. That's what we're going with. Okay. So me, Triple Stars, and Jupac of Hebrew Nation next. There it is.
Why do I keep trying to drink?
I don't know why you drank during that. Anyway, so me and Jupac took a drive down to Georgia, and we originally, because that was, if you'll remember, the Warrior was slated to be at that tour, was like, rumored to be. And we all know what a big time fan of the Warrior I was.
Oh, yeah.
So we took the drive, and as it turns out, it was even better. It was the night that Hogan and Goldberg had their giveaway match on Nitro, and Goldberg beat him. And what a show it was. But the other Nitro I was at, it was at the Nassau Coliseum, when there were more fights in the audience than there were in the ring that night.
Yeah, I remember that. I actually remember watching that. That was crazy. Did you ever watch ECW back in the day?
I used to have my neighbor friend, Rob. We would have him stand on our roof with rabbit ears so that we could get the ECW shows. Like, there's a bunch of people listening right now. Maybe two of them got that joke. Like, what are rabbit ears? I've seen a few
ECWs. I was at the Huntington show.
Okay.
Where they threw so much trash and pocket change into the ring that Paul Heyman came out to the ring and said, "We will never be back in this town again."
Nice. When and ECW was too classy for Huntington, West Virginia.
Yeah. So you need to stop throwing crap or we'll never be back again. And they were, needless to say, they were never back again.
And they went challenge accepted. I have been to a couple of WrestleManias. I've been to 14 when Austin won the title. I've been to 15 where they hung the Boss Man. You know what I'm talking about.
I forgot about that.
We had ourselves a live hanging in Philadelphia. Filthy-delphia.
What?
Dude, I remember my friend. I went. Me and Jupac and another one of our friends went to WrestleMania 15 where they done hung the Boss Man. And I remember just looking at each other like, it's dumb to be a wrestling fan.
It's insane to be a wrestling fan. Live hanging, mm-hmm. Crucifixions,
yep,
coffin surfing.
Yes, the only thing that was missing from that Big Show segment with the Boss Man was Yakety Sax from the Benny Hill show.
That was Triple H. Was that not Triple H? It was. Yeah, it was the Boss Man. Hooked his dad's coffin up, and he. God jumped on it and rode the coffin, surfed the coffin out of the graveyard.
So back when I was doing the Mania of WrestleMania with Pat Mullen, I showed Jonas the Kennel from Hell match and then had to explain to him the context of it, which my son, Big Dog Lover at the time, this was a few years ago, Big Dog Lover. And I'm just like, so the Boss Man cut up and served Al Snow his dog Pepper and called it pepper steak. Get it, son? You ever make a child cry by accident and just feel like the worst parent ever? I've been to 14, 15. I was at 18 with the NWO and Hulk Hogan and The Rock and all that.
Man.
Yeah, God. Do you remember fucking Razor Ramon's stunner bump?
He
yeeted out of the ring.
He yeeted himself in the air and took the biggest back bump from a stunner I've ever seen. I was like,
rose petals flew up. It was ridiculous.
I mean, like, it was like a John Woo movie. Like, doves flew out. It was slow motion. And then he hit. And I'm like, that was, I popped so big. It was the greatest bump I've ever seen in my life. Forgive me if you're not a wrestling fan and I use terminology that maybe both of us do.
People are going to have to keep up.
We're smarts.
Worst oversell in the history, or worst bump in the history of WWE. Shawn Michaels versus Hulk Hogan, or Razor Ramon versus Steve Austin?
Well,
boy, that's a tough one. They were both
done on purpose.
Yeah.
So they're the best worst. But I'm gonna go with the best worst being Shawn Michaels, because he did it because Hogan was being a dick.
Yeah.
About everything. Ruined a whole series that could have drawn a lot of money and a lot of fame. And Michaels was even saying, yeah, man, you'll go over at the end. You're going to be the winner of this series.
Sure.
Let's just have this series, you know. And then, and Hogan says, no, I want to win the, you know, I want to win tonight.
Right. So Shawn Michaels, you're kind of taking Hogan's side on this, but
no, I'm not. Yeah.
But like, so Hogan doesn't want to do business. So Shawn doubles down and does less than no business. It's like, I've never seen Hogan look so aggravated. And that guy had to wrestle the Warrior in the 2000s.
He did.
All right.
Okay.
Real fast. So I was at 18. I was at both shows in Orlando. I was at Miami. I was at Dallas.
Nice.
God, the Dallas WrestleMania in the last couple of years, where I think it was Zack Ryder who won the Intercontinental ladder match. Worst WrestleMania I've ever been to. Like,
that was not a good WrestleMania.
I was there with Melissa, and I don't think, other than when Melissa made me late to the Orlando show because she had to stop at IKEA first in Orlando, I don't think I've ever been angrier at a WrestleMania. I was so pissed. It was the worst.
Stop at IKEA on the way to this WrestleMania, this expensive ticketed, you know.
Yeah. And I was at the New York show, which was the last show they did before they went to two nights. So that had to have been, I think, 2019. That was Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey, and Charlotte, where I froze my tuchus off. And then the next year was at the Performance Center because of the unknown virus of unnamed origin. I would have gone to the Tampa show, but we were just out of the lockdown, and then it went to two nights, and I didn't want to go. But I was pissed I didn't go to the Tampa show, like right here in my hometown.
It was a good show.
Not a bad show. No, it was a good comeback show from everything that had happened the year before. All right, so let's get into this year's WrestleMania. Start with the Hall of Fame, and there's really only one thing I want to talk about with the Hall of Fame. You kind of mentioned it before with ECW. That was Paul Heyman. Uh-huh. The Paul Heyman speech at the Hall of Fame. Dude, you know he's like my second favorite promo, like first or second favorite promo of all time, right?
Yeah, me too. I mean, because I'm like, everybody says I'm a Paul Heyman guy. I literally am a Paul Heyman guy.
I have a shirt.
Been since WCW. You do have the shirt.
I'm a Jim Cornette and a Paul Heyman guy.
I'm not.
Mommy and Daddy fight.
Oh, but they're always going to fight.
Oh yeah, Cornette and Paul Heyman are like fucking Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just fight fucking forever, man.
But the only thing is they're actually not really friends. But I'm not a corny guy so much. I understand. He tells some good stories.
Mm.
He's done some good work in the past. But I just think he doesn't know how to change, and he gets grumpy about it.
He sees wrestling a very certain way, and I think to the degree that he's right, makes money, but his way is not the only way.
Right, exactly. I understand some of his stuff, like, you know, Japan is a very silly place when it comes to wrestling.
Sure.
They'll either, you know, they will pop for a spinning toe hold and then yawn at a 650-degree splash while you're on fire.
Let's not mince words. Japan is where the wrestling the doll became famous.
That's what they were not Kenny Omega.
Two incidences of a girl getting kicked in the face. Two different girls, by the way. Two different wrestlers, two different girls. But it's not like the WWE. It's not like the America doesn't have fucking silly wrestlers.
Oh, Joey Ryan. Joey Ryan, but he's kind of not allowed to wrestle anywhere anymore.
Well, you can't wrestle when you're a sex pervert.
Right. Who would have thought, you know, with the Dickplex or whatever he called it.
Yeah, I don't understand why anyone, like, why people thought Joey Ryan was going to be a sex pervert with, you know, his finishing move was grab me by the dick and flip yourself.
Yeah, and then he's like, well, I didn't realize he would touch people. Really? Really?
The devil you said. Joey Ryan!
Anywho. So anyway, but Paul Heyman, this speech... For me, I watched it first before I watched anything because I didn't get to see the Hall of Fame live.
Yeah.
But then I saw a quick excerpt from his speech and I was like, I have to watch that whole thing just to set the tone for the night. And when I tell you that it set the tone for the entire night, it really did, because it seemed like the entire roster fed off his energy.
Yeah.
And he is an amazing storyteller. He's an amazing promo guy. And he is a wrestling genius. Financial idiot, but yeah, wrestling genius.
If he, my ex-wife, estranged wife, Melissa, parent of my children, whatever you want to call her. She has a lot of gimmicks. She used to joke that Paul Heyman was my alternate universe successful person. Paul Heyman is the successful version of me in an alternate universe. And you know, that's the thing, is like when you're wildly creative, when you have a passion for things, it's hard to trust other people. And Paul Heyman didn't trust people, and what he needed was a trusted partner who could manage the finances, because like, you see him hug Bubba Ray. You see him hug Tommy Dreamer, and he fucked both of those guys. You know, and they obviously they love him, but there's some bad blood there in terms of you ever hear Tommy Dreamer talk about the end of ECW where Paul Heyman was like, "No, we're not closing," as he's like signing his WWE contract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you then know, you know, Tommy Dreamer's going to the ring with Logan's Steakhouse shirts on just so they can get a little extra money,
right? You know Bubba Ray's like says similar stories about the end of ECW where it was like, you know, Paul, what are we doing? And he was like, the number you have dialed is disconnected. It's like, you motherfucker. You know,
the thing of it is though, is like, they understand.
Yeah.
They understand where he came from.
It's water under the bridge at this point.
Yeah. And everyone, and they love him, and
love him for giving each other.
And he gave them he gave literally the story between him and Stone Cold was, hey, Steve, what are you doing? Well, GD, kid, I'm sitting on my, you know, butt here and not doing anything. And he's like, well, are you angry? And he's like, yeah. He said, do you want to talk about it? Yeah, I do. And he's like, well, I've got a microphone. Why don't you come up to Philly and talk about it? He goes, really? So you put him on the air, and Stone Cold Steve Austin was born.
So if you think about like modern wrestling right now, AEW is kind of the place where painters paint. You know, WWE, people come to work and they paint houses and doors, and they are professional and they are neat and they are acute. AEW, people are like covering themselves with paint and rolling on the floor and going, art, you know. But there is no AEW without ECW, because ECW was the place where very creative, very talented people came to paint. And the difference being, when you give Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, the late, unfortunate Chris Benoit, you know, the Pitbulls, you know, Sabu, Rob Van Dam, Taz, and you say paint, and you know, you get like years of amazing art. When you give Joey Janela, when you give Kenny Omega, when you give,
now don't be too harsh on Omega. He's a phenomenal wrestler.
They do some weird shit in AEW, is the point that I'm trying to make. When you give these guys paint and you get like nonsense that's unreadable, you know, that's the difference. Is like, but I credit AEW with a place where creative people can go on the model of what Paul Heyman was doing with ECW. And what he said in his speech about, we were the revolution that wrestling needed. You know, he always likes to go back to like, by the way, Dwight the Clown was long gone by the time ECW starts, you know, like,
was still going.
Not like it was a different guy by that point. Like, you know, good Dwight the Clown was gone. Well gone.
Well,
but it's so funny because it's like, it's like we had clowns and we had plumbers and we had this and we had that. And it's like they're naming things from different
trash men. And
yeah, it's just like that feels like different eras we're talking about, but sure, it was all happening at the same time.
1993 was about when they started. 93 is when ECW started.
Right.
But you don't.
But 96 is when working. I feel like 96 is when like Salvatore Sincere and the Goon and all them showed up. But it all gets lumped together.
They showed up in the past. Well,
I can tell you. I know why, because I wasn't watching for a while.
Okay.
Here's what I'll tell you. Because I talked about this with Pat when we did the Mania of WrestleMania. About the time that the Warrior and Bulldog get nailed to steroids and everyone leaves, and we have that period where the top of the company is Luger, Bret Hart, and Jerry Lawler, is when I fucked off of wrestling because I couldn't take it anymore. I was like, this is awful. Jerry Lawler looks like my neighbor. I'm not watching this.
Well, I mean, we can discuss AEW versus WWE at a later date.
Yeah, sure.
Because I feel a little bit bad for AEW. I think they get a bad name, a bad rap, just because, I mean, you see on the internet where people call them, you know, a carny mud show and all this other stuff.
Listen, I give them credit for being just enough competition to, you know,
make them worried,
to make WWE worried. Yeah. And, you know, but it's kind of like reminiscent of the Monday Night Wars. They were just enough competition to spark a fire, and look where we are now. One of the best WrestleManias in history that we're going to eventually get to talking about.
Right. You take a look at Sting. Sting wouldn't have stuck around. Sting's the type of guy who would have been like, I'm out, if it had been nearly that bad. You know, Sting doesn't put up a lot of bull crap, and he retired there. That's where he retired. So
my favorite Paul Heyman moment, the night before Survivor Series, when the invasion ended, what a brilliant promo he wrote. Like, dude, so, you know, both my kids, to one degree or another, are performers. And, you know, so there's a lot of talk in my house about monologue structure, because you have to know a monologue when you have to do auditions. Something I've talked to my daughter about, because she has to do auditions. And which
I was an actor at one point.
Yes. So I've shown them The Coffee Is for Closers recently. That's a fun monologue.
I want your daughter to go into her like her middle school or whatever. She's in middle school, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And do Coffees for Closers on
Sunday. Oh yeah. No, first day of school of eighth grade, I want to be like, excuse me, young lady, what is your name? Fuck you. That's my name. Put the coffee down. Jesus Christ, kid.
What is your father? And then you come in, you're like, oh, okay. No, Lily, go back to class. We need to talk to your dad.
And you and the big meaty man slapping meat shirt. What is your name? Fuck you. That's my name. Oh, Jesus, that's where she gets it from.
Are you wearing the big meaty man shirt? Yes, you are. I didn't realize that.
I dress for success. Anyway. I
need one of those.
So, the point is, before I showed them The Coffee Is for Closers, I showed them Paul Heyman. I have showed them the pipe bomb, and I showed them Paul Heyman's pre-Survivor Series end of invasion speech. Dude, him fucking throwing the hat at Vince McMahon. Yeah, him throwing the hat at Vince McMahon. Oh. That whole, like, you know, you took Shawn Michaels' smile and you bought a jet. You took Bret Hart's career and made yourself a billionaire. Yeah. He's going on and on. So good.
Well, the whole, have you ever heard him tell the story about that promo?
Where
he looks at, they looked at him and said, Paul, we'll give you the mic and you say whatever you want to say. And he goes, whatever I want to say, huh? And he's like, Vince, do you want to know what I'm going to say? And he goes, no, draw me money. And he goes, are you sure? He goes, no, I don't want to know. Draw me money. And he's like, all right. And he invoked the name of Vince McMahon Sr., which you don't do unless you do it in great reverence.
Right.
And he said, Vince, I'm going to say some pretty harsh stuff out there. Are you sure? Draw me money. And he's like, okay, you know.
So he went out. Whatever you say, boss.
Whatever you say. He went out and he drew him money. And
dude, your kids hate Vince. You. Your kids hate you and your father would be ashamed of you.
Yeah.
Ow!
Oh, my gosh. I literally, my when I saw that, this was my reaction going, oh, no.
I'm good, though. Thanks, Jonas.
Yeah, Jonas. Oh, I love it, kid. But this is reminiscent of that because I mean, he started dropping F bombs and
dude, he was legitimately pissed. Like that line about, like, you took everything from everybody. I don't care about Sam Mushnick. You stole from me, Vince. Yeah. You stole Extreme and turned it into Attitude. We got Attitude. You got nothing, pal. It's such a good speech. So just to kind of wrap this up, we can move on to WrestleMania.
Well, that's where I was going with his Hall of Fame speech. He started dropping F-bombs in it, setting the tone and kind of letting everybody know that Vince McMahon doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah. Can we just talk about that for a second? Like how like there's a, like the absence of Vince McMahon. I've been saying this in the chat all day. I'll say it live now.
It's a different show.
It felt like after the slaves were free, suddenly suddenly the air doesn't feel quite as dense and acrid. You know, everyone feels lighter. Like I've never seen Triple H has always been kind of a grumpy guy, and I've never seen him happier. Including when he was like banging Stephanie and doing all kinds of DX nonsense.
Yeah.
Like he's never looked, you can tell how much happier everyone is with Vince gone.
Well, the fact of the matter is that they've hid the fact that Vince is a lecherous
sex pervert
piece of crap.
Yes.
Trash bag human being for so long.
Rapist.
And now that he's gone, and somebody has spoke out against him, alleged sexual assault, alleged sex trafficking.
We have to go back to the casual heroes. Allegedly.
Oh, I feel dirty.
Somewhere Chris and Gavin are just like, wait, what?
What? Who invoked us? But the thing about like the whole the whole thing of it is like, everybody just felt like, let's just have fun tonight.
Yeah.
Let's have a good show. Let's put on an amazing wrestling show. And they did.
I hate Michael Cole. And Michael Cole screaming out on night two, I love pro wrestling. Dude, yes! I was driving, and if I hadn't been, I'd have thrown my pants out the window. Good for you, Michael Cole.
Yeah. I mean, Pat McAfee. When Sami Zayn hit the brainbuster, and on Gunther, and you see in the background, Pat McAfee is just losing his mind, screaming brainbuster, and you know that like Michael Cole, that was night one. Michael Cole is just laughing along with him.
Right,
they're having fun. They don't have Vince in their ear saying, "Stop doing that." Because Vince had his nose in every aspect of everything. Micromanaging.
Right. The story which means he had his fucking mouth in Paul Heyman's ears, too.
Exactly. And Paul Heyman just he wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
And, like, it was just everybody had fun. They put on a great show. They gave 100%. You could tell in every match that everybody tried. Even the sixth... It is not against women's wrestling. I just don't like any of the wrestlers on one side. Well, I like one out of the three on one side. I don't like Bianca Belair. I don't know why.
I was going to say, if you say something bad about Jade Cargill, I'm ending the podcast.
No, she's awesome. Well, not even that. I just think she's a good wrestler.
I wouldn't go that far. But Jade Cargill is quite a presence.
I say good wrestler. I think she's good stompy, kicky, throw people thing.
Yes.
Naomi's useless.
She's very athletic. That whole crew.
We
got to wrap up with Paul Heyman because we're all over Paul the Heyman, here.
Yes. Even that match, I was into. You know, because they were having a good match. You know.
Yeah.
And but Paul Heyman set the tone with his speech at the Hall of Fame, embarrassing Triple H or Paul Levesque, whatever you want to say. You know, with nothing but good things to say about him, and it, you know, that was echoed throughout the weekend. This is the Paul Levesque era. This is the, you know,
boy was it ever.
Yeah, and so his whole speech, you could tell it was off the cuff too. When he had that box, I was like, I think I know what's in the box. What's in the box?
And what's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box?
What's in the box? You know what's in the box. But he pulled the jacket out, and then he pulled the hat and the phone, and he's like, oh man, that's real. I broke that over, you know. And then the headset, and I was like, oh, here he is, Polly.
All we needed was 911 to show up.
I just choke slam everybody and walk out.
Grab Stephanie and choke slammer.
Yeah, he did choke slam a lot of women then, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did.
Yeah. But and that led us into that led that was the perfect lead into night one.
It really was. And I like the stars really aligned for this. They put Paul Heyman in the Hall of Fame in Philly. Oh. Perfect. Like you can't get any better. Just real quick, I mean, and then I'll get into night one.
Who inducted him?
I didn't see it. Roman Reigns.
Oh, that's why I didn't watch it. Yeah. I thought that would be
I watched the whole thing and they were all fine enough speeches. You know, I enjoyed the Bull Nakana stuff. I enjoyed the stuff with The Rock. I kind of fast forwarded through. I'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah.
But just to let my last word on Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame speech. It's when I was in college and I had to take I took an acting class and we did a chapter on or a segment on monologues. You know, even in a monologue, there should be a beginning, middle, and end. And so Paul Heyman kind of like, I don't know how to just be myself. I've always been a character. And he's very much addressing his children and saying, if you're ever, you know, if you are even half as successful as like Stephanie is. And it's like, wow, this is like really impassioned stuff. And I love the way he spoke to his son and his daughter. And they are just trying, God help them both. They were trying as hard as could to keep their shit together. It looked like they both wanted to cry. Like, all of that was great. You know, him, like, you hear over years of wrestling, being a wrestling fan, there's so much bad blood between people for one reason or another. And everyone just sort of, like, letting bygones be bygones. And so he's, like, he's hugging Vince. And he's, God, do you, just real quick, I don't want to get into a whole thing because we'll be here for, like, 10 hours.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the night that Stephanie came out as the head of ECW, the night of the ECW invasion.
Yeah.
When they formed the Alliance. And everyone threw their shoe at the television because of her. And for him to kind of like all these years later, like she's wearing the hat, he acknowledges her, and she's like, it's all good, babe, you know, and she looks at him with love, and it's, given all that's happened between those two, like, that's great. That you know, that was nice. And then he goes into, you know, his Join the Revolution character, and suddenly I'm in my late teens, early 20s again.
Yeah.
So, oh, like, man, 19... I'm telling you. I mean, like, what was, like, the big year that ECW went crazy? It was 1995.
Five, with Living Dangerously.
Yeah, I'm, like, a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. You know, like, ECW was made for guys my age. Well, just, you know.
96, 97, Living Dangerously? I'm sorry. That was their first pay-per-view, but that's when they really hit it big.
I was going to say, because 96 is the first year that, like, Austin, Foley, and all of them
97.
Start making waves.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, we have the Austin era. But, like, that 1995 ECW, because I think he talked about it, like, it starting in 1993. But so by 1995, ECW among wrestling fans in particular was kind of like a household name. It was, they were the Ramones of wrestling. You know, they were the Sex Pistols of wrestling.
Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Right. And then Jimmy with the other murderer, Jimmy Snuka.
Jim Snuka. And then what's his name that worked with Paul? I can't remember his name. Todd. His first name's Todd. Bought Eastern Championship. No, I can't remember.
Just move on.
Yeah, Todd bought Eastern Championship Wrestling.
Right.
And nobody knew
that
Shane Douglas was going to come out and throw the belt down and produce the Extreme Championship world heavyweight championship belt.
Right.
And
the thing I used to say about ECW, and then we're gonna move on, is ECW was the place where you never knew what was gonna happen next. In a world where everything is scripted and everything is expected and you kind of know what's gonna happen in each wrestling show with each wrestling match, and you know, especially back then, we're not a lot of surprises, you never knew what you were gonna get with ECW, and that was the big takeaway from both WCW and WWF at the time. It was, we need to create happenings on an ongoing basis. And 2 years later, you know, I was in the Garden when Austin stunned McMahon that first time. It set a precedent. You know,
it was amazing.
When fucking Hall in 1996 hops the rail and says, you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. And 2 weeks later, Kevin Nash doesn't know the difference between a verb and an adjective. It's great. You know,
one of the greatest things ever to happen in wrestling.
Check out the adjective. Play. And, all right, Kevin, let's move along. You're so then, big and pretty.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
All right. Night one of WrestleMania.
One quick question. Who almost but did not debut for ECW? who was in the crowd ready to sign a contract.
Oh, Kurt Angle. Yeah, and they fucking crucified. They legit crucified. I mean, at least the WWE had the common sense to just nail Austin to the Undertaker symbol. Like, we're light crucifying here. It's fine. The people at USA are fine with this because it's not an actual cross.
They actually like tied Sandman to a cross with barbed wire.
Crown of thorns on him.
Crown of barbed wire and like, thorns on
him. Just short of putting the actual nails through his wrist. That's how far they went. There's Mr. I have to win everything Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle going, the fuck are you people doing?
He said, don't even say I was here. Nobody knew he was there for the longest time until Kurt Angle himself told that story. Paul wasn't going to catch a charge on that. He would catch a case.
And then a few years later, Kurt Angle will try to murder Shane McMahon through a glass window.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Go through the fucking glass!
It was Shane! Shane kept going, do it again.
Do it again! Like,
and you can always see Kurt Angle go, oh, why not? And just throwing him through the window.
Fucking Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon's light BDSM relationship. hit me again, Kurt. Oh, boy.
Night one.
What was night one? All right, so night one was was too long ago. All right, night one was Rhea Ripley defeating Becky Lynch. Spoilers, by the way. The 97 teams in a tag team match. It was a 6-pack tag team ladder match. So I told the boys and the girl that I was watching this with, my kids and bonus kid. I was like, listen, if there's one match that's going to be awesome on this show, it's going to be this one. This is 97 wrestlers falling off ladders. And like, both boys are just like, we came for blood. And I'm like,
Yep,
that's a ladder match for you. It's like, here's how many careers we can end real fast.
When they go through the ladder, I mean, that hurts.
What was it, Grayson Waller, who fucking took the ladder bump and broke the goddamn thing in half?
Waller, I think it broke Grayson Waller in half.
There's no doubt. All right, so that was A Town Down Under, which is Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Austin, you're free now. You don't have to play with eggs anymore. The Awesome Truth are back. The Judgment Day.
Oh, I love them.
Hashtag DIY. The New Day. New Catch Republic. Mm-hmm. And the winner of that one was...
Awesome Truth.
The Awesome Truth. That's right. Yes.
And they won the Raw one. Who won the SmackDown one?
Grayson Waller and Austin Theory.
That's right, because they broke up the tag titles.
Yeah. Rey Mysterio and Andrade. So funny. So my daughter fucking hates Charlotte Flair with a passion. Like, my daughter doesn't hate anybody. She's just like, Hitler, he seems fine. He was a painter. She's like, she loves everybody. Except for Charlotte Flair. She fucking hates Charlotte Flair.
That shocks me for some reason. I don't know why.
I don't understand why either. So she's watching wrestling with us. I'm like, hey, you know who's married to Charlotte Flair? She's like, Andrade. And I point him out on screen because you know who the fuck Andrade is.
Yeah.
And she's like, wait, Charlotte Flair is married to that guy? And I'm like, in the third best comment of the entire weekend, he's married to that guy? And I'm like, yeah, why? She's like, I don't know. I thought Charlotte Flair would marry like a rich businessman, not some wrestler dude. I'm like, okay, Lil.
Wow.
Poor Charlotte. Anyway, then Jey Uso defeated Jimmy Uso. Jade Cargill.
I used to not like the Usos, but they are really coming up. I like their work. Yeah.
Yeah. Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi defeated Damage Control, featuring Darth Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. Sami Zayn in like the match of the night defeated poor old Gunther. Ugh, what a match. And then the bloodline of The Rock and Roman Reigns with Paul Heyman defeated Cody and Seth freaking Rollins. Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch, I think, put on a really good match. And we don't have to go over these like match.
I love
like, whatever
I
the
love,
highlights are.
I love Rhea Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
I like Becky Lynch, but I think I'm fully in love with Rhea Ripley. I don't know why.
I have to say, Becky Lynch's outfit. That was made out of pages of her book.
Yeah, that was pretty
nice
cool.
Touch. Yeah, it was. Rhea Ripley, like her time is definitely now. She's another one where, like, they gave her too much too soon, and she kind of blew up on the launch pad, and then they kind of spit shine
her out.
Put her in the Judgment Day. Put her with Dominic Mysterio, and suddenly she's a superstar.
Like, well, she killed it. She accepted it. She pulled a Dusty on him.
Yeah.
You know, Vince gave him polka dots and he made it work.
Yeah.
You know, and so she pulled a Dusty. She took it. She ran with it and she made it work. And now everybody loves her.
Yeah.
You know, and I know why, because she can work.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the looks, she's got the attitude, and she's good to her fans. So
Bailey and I were, Chris Bailey and I were chatting back and forth on the show. And one of the things we talked about with the Usos was this lacked intensity. Like, this is a blood feud between brothers. Like, do you remember when Demolition opened the Royal Rumble? Like, that had more intensity. Like, this is, they've been at each other for a while now. You know, they were brothers, they are twins, they were in the bloodline. And here we are at the final chapter of this long, drawn out, tortured story. And it felt, and this is what I told Bailey, I don't see if you agree with this, it felt like when Randy Orton and Triple H had their end of feud match at WrestleMania that began with a home invasion. Like, we started high intensity and ended with meh.
I have a theory on this, and you may not like it.
Is it an Austin theory?
No. I think The Rock killed their intensity.
Go on.
Because The Rock took the focus off of a lot of things when he came back.
As he does.
Back.
Yeah.
And now that he's like a chairperson in TKO Holdings or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it's going to happen a lot more. But he took the spotlight off of certain things that were happening within the bloodline. And unfortunately, I think Jay and Jimmy were the two that suffered the most,
because
they are an afterthought compared to they weren't, because everything's like, oh my gosh, Jay and Jimmy. Then you've got this, you've got Reigns going against Cody, and this, and all of a sudden The Rock comes back and says, hey, I'm here. And everything else gets thrown to the side. And poor Jay and Jimmy, you don't really, I mean, what do you do with them?
Right.
And I think that's what happened, you know. I really do.
It almost feels to me like when TNA when TNA put the title on Cowboy, what's his nuts? But it was months too late.
Yeah,
I almost said fucking Cowboy Bob Orton, not Cowboy Bob Orton.
That's what I can't get out of my head.
Yeah.
It's beer money.
Yeah, America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
This is killing me. If you're watching and you know who we're talking about, we're both two old men struggling with names right now. Just throw it at us. But yeah, old. when they had at the perfect time, and because Vince Russo's a fucking idiot, you know, they waited, and then by the time they gave him the title, nobody gave a shit. Like, the Uso thing probably needed to come to an end a lot sooner than it did, but they dragged it out till WrestleMania, and then it lacked intensity. And by that point, I think people were kind of over it.
I think it suffered from The Rock. I think it could have had intensity. Mm-hmm. I think it could have. If they drug it past this, it would be dead.
Right. Friend of the show, Pat Mullins, not a huge fan of Sami Zayn. You know, he's not, you know, Sami Zayn doesn't do it for Pat. And Pat is probably representative of a lot of wrestling fans. But for most mortals, Sami Zayn is like the ultimate underdog. You know, who hasn't beat the shit out of Sami Zayn? But Sami Zayn has drew a loyal following among most pro wrestling fans, not for his size, not for his look, but for his ability to fight through all odds. And, you know, he kind of has that Tommy Dreamer air about him, where Tommy Dreamer like never wanted to win the title, you know, and it was always like everyone, that was kind of the whole thing with Tommy Dreamer, was like, we just want him to win and he never does. And finally he does get the win over Raven, but he doesn't win the title because he was a weirdo. Sami Zayn kind of has that kind of thing going for him. And then he's up against Gunther, one of the single best technical professional wrestlers and toughest professional wrestlers going today. Yeah, Gunther. Like, I know I do the thing for the chicks because I like them, but I also for Gunther, man, he is a man's man. Like, I'll take my chances with an ass whooping against most people, including Brock Lesnar. I won't fight Gunther. I was like, that's a no thank you for me.
And not saying anything against Brock, because I know. I'm not normally a big Brock fan. That's just in wrestling.
That's where you're wrong.
I mean, that's just mostly in wrestling. I mean, I've watched his interviews. He seems like a personable guy, even though he doesn't like being around a lot of people, or just doesn't like people.
He still has the second best UFC post fight interview ever. Now I'm gonna go home and lay on my wife. Alrighty, yeah. Brock, thanks. You know what the first best one is? First best. He has the third best. The second best is Ben Henderson screaming in what's his face? Joe Rogan's face. All things are possible through Christ.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Yep, yep.
But the best
one, bleeding and his eyes hanging out and everything.
But the best one is the one UFC fighter who was like, "Why'd you take your shirt off? Because my balls was hot."
Yeah.
Best post fight ever. My balls was hot. Well, thank you, Derek Lewis. I think, yeah, Derek Lewis.
So Sammy got some good chops in there. You can hear him pop, then all of a sudden, Gunter fires back with one.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just realize, oh, that man can't breathe right now because he collapsed his lung.
Popped his lung. Oh, yeah. How unfortunate for you, Sammy.
But I've watched Gunther just get run through people, and just his
do you
European
remember his
uppercut
series of matches with Dragunov.
Yeah,
when they were both in NXT UK.
Yeah,
those were brutal. Nobody watched NXT UK, not even the people in fucking England.
UK,
not even the people in the UK. Everyone watched those matches. Those were great.
I mean, I watched it when it was when they had the bruiserweight. I can't remember his name now.
Yeah,
I liked him. I liked him and the short guy,
Pete Dunne,
and the shorter guy that won the title.
Right.
I thought they had some great matches, and then all of a sudden, Gunther comes along, and you're like, oh.
Oh, oh my. When that was when he was beefy, too.
Yeah.
Dude, that Gunther was so good.
And then he drops his weight and gains muscle. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know how it's possible for him to chop any harder than he did, but you can hear it in space when he hits people. I mean, you're like, astronauts are floating around, and they're like, what was that?
Huh. Ground control? Did you get that?
Oh, that was just perfect. We were watching WrestleMania.
We'll talk about real quick the main event here between Cody and Seth freaking Rollins versus Roman Reigns and The Rock. I mean, it was a good schmozzy main event. You know, they went through the crowd. They did their shit. And I think it ended the way it should have because obviously because we know what happens next. And I was thinking about that, like. There was a part of me that wanted Cody and Seth to win because I really just wanted to see Cody and Roman have an uninterrupted match. But if you're going to have a match with 87 run-ins, they really did it the best way, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Oh, my gosh, they did.
So, you know, in high, like, I didn't totally love the conclusion of the tag match because I wanted Cody and Seth to win. Because I wanted Cody to have that, like, it's just me and you, Roman, nobody else, no bloodline. No 87 other people, just me and you and God in this ring. And we didn't get that. So I was kind of bummed. But the match itself, I think, was good. And Brad was into it.
It's a good way to bring The Rock back on.
Yeah. And The Rock has talked about, like, he's been asked to come back for a couple of years now, and he waited for the time to be right. You know, Vince was gone. But I think also there had to be the right story. And The Rock's not stupid. And I think The Rock learned his lessons from the Die Rocky Die era of, hey, let's not fuck with the fans. And if you're gonna make me do some dumb shit, I'm not coming back.
Did he really learn when he said? I honestly don't think it was a work. I think he really wanted to wrestle Roman Reigns for the world title.
I'm sure he did. And then he had a post traumatic stress disorder moment of Die Rocky Die, and thought,
everybody started chanting Die Rocky Die again. He's like, no, thank you. Where am I?
We're totally doing again. A tag match. No.
Hey, look over here.
So the first night I watched, the first night I watched with my kids, I didn't watch the second night at home. I missed most of it, and I caught the last part of the main event while I was driving home.
Yeah, you and I were in the same boat on that one.
But as far as and just really quickly, I don't mind the two night thing. I understand why when you can fill a stadium twice, you know, and you have 8 hours of wrestling. I was at the New York show the last time they did 8 hours like that. It's a lot. It's a lot to ask of people. And I remember, like, we left early and caught the triple threat with the ladies back at the hotel because we were so exhausted. Like, ending fucking WrestleMania at 1 o'clock in the morning, if you're on the East Coast, is a big ask of people. So the two nights don't bother me. On the other hand, I kind of don't want to watch two nights of wrestling anymore. when in their 4 hour shows. This, I mean, this ran from 7 to 11 o'clock, and I'm like, yeah. I'm kind of over it. I want to go do something else. And considering what else I did, I made the right choice. But someone out there got that and is smiling. Anyway,
that wasn't me, and I'm not.
No, it wasn't you. At least not last night. But I do understand the reason for it, and like I can't be mad at him. But it's a lot of wrestling to watch in 2 days, especially with NXT and Effie's Big Gay Brunch and, you know, the whole thing.
That's not a thing in WrestleMania.
It is for me, sister. Night two.
Go ahead. Night two.
So Drew McIntyre defeated Seth Rollins. And this I did see because I caught it on a replay. Damian Priest cashed in his money in the bank CM Punk showed up, beat the fuck out of Drew McIntyre. Damian Priest cashed in, and now he's your new World Heavyweight Champion. You keep saying, like, in living color that you hated it. So tell me why.
I think Drew McIntyre deserves a run with the belt, and I don't think
really because his first one went so well.
You asked me a question, and then you interrupt my answer. Sorry, I'm just kidding. You did. I think he can do it. I think he can run with it. He was also a Vince guy, you know, and now that he doesn't have to be a Vince guy, I think he can do better. It could have stayed on Seth Rollins and I would have been happy. Mm-hmm. I just don't like Damian Priest as a champion. I don't know. I guess it's because I'm not as familiar with his work as other people are. You know,
mm-hmm. He was pretty dope as Punishment Martinez.
Yeah, I get it, but I don't know.
I get it.
Yeah, that. I mean, if anybody out of that stable deserves it, I think freaking Fergal Devitt. Finn Balor deserves a run.
Every time they put a title on him, he injures himself. And I love Finn Balor. But I think I love Finn Balor when he was doing the demon, because I love the demon entrance.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of, you know, like, there's been a couple of wrestlers where, like, they are an entrance and then they're done. And I love Finn Balor.
He's stupid talented, though.
Yeah, no. Finn Balor was great. He's also 3 feet tall and Irish and fucking injury prone. Like, okay. I get why the W... Okay, hang on.
So is Shawn Michaels.
Nah, get the fuck out of here.
Shawn Michaels was a little injury prone.
Dude, he wrestled for 100 years and yeeted off ladders on a regular basis. Give Shawn a break.
No, I am. He was also so coked out, he didn't know he was injured half the time.
I understand he had so much cocaine in him, he didn't realize he broke his back on that casket.
Yeah.
but don't hate on Shawn.
I'm not. I love Shawn Michaels. He's one of my top five, I believe.
I just, like, look, for a little while there, you would not have found a bigger Finn Balor fan than me. But I can kind of see where the company is like, hey, maybe let's put the title on the other guy who's young-ish. Because I also think Punishment Martinez is around 40. Damian Priest. So I don't confuse
you. Yeah, there's nobody in that company that is not pushing 40 at this point.
Yeah. So the youth movement of 40-year-olds. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Bobby Roode, man, when they brought him into NXT, he was like Pawpaw Roode coming in to teach the youngins how to do it. And then they're like, all right, you're main roster material now. I was like, he's been main roster material for years.
I'm collecting Social Security. Leave me alone.
65 years old. Give him a chance, you know?
All right, so the rest of the matches were The Pride, which are Bobby Lashley, Angelo Dawkins, and Montez Ford.
That was better than I thought it was going to be.
Versus the Final Testament of Karrion Kross, Akam, and Razor. LA Knight defeated AJ Styles. Logan Paul defeated Kevin Owens and Randy Orton. And Bayley defeated Io Sky.
Has no business being as talented as he is. At wrestling.
I want to say it was last year's Royal Rumble where Logan Paul and what's his nuts there?
Ricochet
did the flying midair clothesline. Yeah, my kids still talk about that. like it was Hogan slamming Andre.
I still talk about it like it was Hogan slamming Andre.
Yeah, that was some sick shit. Look,
I thought it was going to be a joke.
I don't discredit Logan Paul. Logan Paul gets the ups. He did the training. He's got a big name. He's everything we've ever asked anyone that gets into wrestling to be. Take it seriously. Do your job. Mm-hmm. Be entertaining. Sell tickets. Don't fuck up. And right. I can't say Logan Paul's on any of those things. Like, I'm not going to bag on him because he's a Paul. Like, he's not the right celebrity. Like, fuck that. Like, look, if when Logan Paul boxes or wrestles, my kids pay attention. And it's so hard to get them into anything that isn't on YouTube, TikTok, or an anime.
Right.
So big ups to him.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't like him as a YouTuber or whatever.
Right.
He's a terrible boxer, in my opinion.
Of course he is.
You know, I mean, like, and everybody, and then I'm saying in my opinion, because I'm not the biggest boxing fan, Pat Mullen might throw up on him in real life, you know. but it's just one of those things where, like, he came in, he impressed me, a fan, which is what you're supposed to do.
Right.
In his very first match in, I was like, wow, he can work, you know, he needs some polish and, you know, he needs polished up in certain areas, but. That was impressive. I mean, so he wasn't Dennis Rodman.
He's better than some indie guys that come up. Yeah, like, really welcome the amount of indie guys that have washed out of the WWE because they couldn't hack it. Meanwhile, this nutsack does well. Like, I can't knock the hustle.
Right, and he comes in, and they say that he is top-notch. He does the work. He does the training. He's respectful backstage. He puts everything into it. And then he just comes out and he's got the Pikachu card and the Prime bottle and all this other stuff. And by the way, Randy Orton had no business kicking that young man in the chest as hard as he did.
Okay.
I mean, I understand he probably deserved it, but that was nasty. Okay. That whoever the other Twitch streamer guy was when they pulled the bottle face off. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you put him in the ring with two guys who've been working for years, and I'm sure they helped him through some stuff, but you've got Kevin Owens and Randy Orton who beat the absolute dog urine out of him in the first part of that match. And I guess that was just a, hey, here you go, boy, this is your first WrestleMania. Get used to it. And they throw him back in and then he has a great match with him.
Yeah.
And I'm just, you know, it was just, I was impressed. I'm just giving him his props because I don't do it enough. Because I think he's a trash bag human being.
Well, yes. All right. So let's talk about the main event here.
Yeah.
So Cody Rhodes defeats Roman Reigns in 33 minutes, 25 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
About where I tuned in was when Solo Sikoa was standing in the ring and you hear John Cena's music. And of course, if one more person tells me they couldn't see John Cena, I'm joining a jihadi movement. Jesus fucking Christ.
I'm
a little over it.
Who's running down? I can't see anybody running down the, you know.
God, I know now somebody who won't let that go to save his fucking life, and I just want to throw him into traffic. And when I mean traffic, I mean a herd of elephants.
Do I know him?
No. Well, maybe. Okay. You know him by my stories. By the stories I tell. Got you.
Yeah,
it's just we get it. Nobody can see John Cena. Go fuck yourselves.
Oh, he's a pair of shorts running down the ring.
Yes, John Cena and his jorts run down the ringside, and then it was, and I was laughing as I'm like driving home watching, and I'm out of the corner of my eye watching this at like stoplights and stuff, and Alexis and I take it easy. Alexis and I joke about. Like the Daffy Duck thing, where like he's at the, is he selling the screenplay and he doesn't have an ending. So he's just like, and then the dam broke and then the cavalry arrived, but they were too late. And there was no other thing to do except to blow your brains out. It's getting so you have to kill yourself to sell a screenplay these days.
Yeah.
And that was this ending, but it was awesome. Cause it was just like
so good.
It was this whole WrestleMania felt like, somebody sat and thought, and this has been my problem with WrestleManias for the last 20 years or so, has been nobody thinks about what the fans want. It's what whoever's running the Vince, who's ever running the show wants, whatever, plan they have next. Like, it felt very much in a bubble. That's why they lost me for a while. Like, I'm watching this product, which seems to only serve the people putting it on. And this is why also why I was a huge AEW fan for a little bit. This doesn't feel like it's for fans. This feels like it's for the people who work in the company, and I'm not into it. And this was the first time in a very long time that I, as a fan, watched and felt like they wrote this show for me and my friends and the people who grew up watching this stuff.
Whole different attitude.
This is the first time I've had a passion for watching wrestling in 10 years. And you know why I know it's 10 years? Because the last time I had any passion for wrestling was when they did the story with Daniel Bryan that ended with him winning the title. And I cried like a baby. I lost my fucking mind when Daniel Bryan won the title, because it felt authentic, even though it was total bullshit.
Yeah.
And everything that happened after was awful. Well, but man.
I got a little emotional when Sami Zayn won the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Because he draws that out of me, you know? He's such a good performer.
Wrestling is at its best when it convinces you it's real, when you damn well know it's not.
I know.
And for the first time in a very long time, it's silly. The whole ending was you know, dumber than a $3 bill, but I had to clean that up a bit for the folks. But
thank you.
You're welcome.
By the folks, you meant me.
Yes, and his misfit and miscreant followers. But if you're a wrestling fan and you're joking with your friends and, you know, you're busting balls, whatever, wouldn't it be funny if John Cena came out and then The Undertaker came out and this person came out and that person came out and holy shit, they did it. Dude, I was waiting for Hogan to come out. I was like, dude, if a real American had... and I fucking hate Hulk Hogan with a passion.
I would have popped. I do too. I would have popped. And then like, yeah, get him, Hogan.
Yeah, if I have to vote for president, my vote between Logan Paul and Hulk Hogan, I'll take Logan Paul. I think that much he's such a scumbag. But had they played real American and Hogan walked out with his feather boa and everything, I'd have died. I'd have absolutely died.
You have to take, you know, some oxygen halfway down the ramp and then keep going, you know.
So, but no,
it started with Jimmy and Jay and Evil Uso in a few years, and then Good Uso, because I get their names mixed up because they're twins, took him out.
Yep.
And then Solo came out, and then John Cena took him out, and then The Rock took out John Cena, and then Seth Rollins came in and got punched in the mouth.
In his shield gimmick.
Shield entrance was amazing.
So two things about that. First of all, I was a huge Shield mark.
Yeah.
It was one of the few things besides Daniel Bryan winning the title that I was really into in wrestling. Yeah. I was over the moon a Shield fan. And I was too. Because of their kind of sort of maybe working relationship with AEW, I thought Dean Ambrose was going to show up.
I did too for just a split second. I was like,
and I thought they were going to rappel down, which would have been awesome.
Yeah, that would have been.
I don't know what's in the fucking stadium. I don't know why I'm thinking they're going to rappel down. What, parachute in?
Helicopter comes in.
oh my God. What is this? Black Hawk down. Anyway,
somebody shines a laser. late 90s, 2000s wrestling.
Into the crash a helicopter, and kill half the people in the audience. But that was ECW, because that's what would have happened.
It would be like, this is the greatest thing ever.
It's like, oh my God, they killed half the crowd with a copter. It was awesome. Because we're horrible.
We're terrible people.
Yeah, anyway, I thought Dean Ambrose was going to show up in the Shield gimmick, but it was just Seth Rollins.
Yeah. Seth Rollins got punched in the face. I thought he should have done more. I thought he should have got at least a little bit of offense on him. But
yeah.
And then my markout moment, my absolute markout moment that almost made me cry.
Yeah.
When you hear the gong or the bell.
Right.
And then the bell, and then the lights go out, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And the lights come up, and there is just Mark. It's not even The Undertaker. It's Mark Calloway.
Yeah, it's looking like him in like my daughter's fucking hoodie, just chilling. Yeah.
With the beanie and the gloves on, because he was apparently Papa Calloway was cold.
Yeah, he
and
was like then, adjusting his pants and he had just taken a piss. This is the whole thing.
He still looked amazing.
Do you remember when he came back as the Underbiker at Judgment Day and he rode the motorcycle down? I wanted that so bad. I wanted him to show up in the motorcycle, just run the Rock over with it, chase him out of the fucking stadium.
The yakety sacks.
But no, they did the disappearing act.
Well, that was great. That's, I mean, vintage, you know, that's, that was where, what I grew up with. That's what I love. Mm. I like the biker gimmick, but I love the dead man gimmick. But when he, you saw that look on his face and he had that spark.
Yes.
Like he had the Undertaker look back. Like I was like, he might really kill him.
I'm kind of thinking part of it was he was just like, you interrupted my nap for this.
he just comes out and stabs him and the lights go out and they're gone. Like
fucking Oz style.
Like,
I deserve this.
But he choke slams him, lights go out, and they're all gone. And I was like, this is brilliant. This is amazing.
Again, this is what any one of us would have written. Like, there's an art to giving the fans what they want, and that's what happened here. This was very much an ode to what do idiot wrestling fans want? They want this. This is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah.
And then Cody wins, and then Cody finally ends, finishes the story.
The only thing that could have made it any better, other than Dean Ambrose, was if they let, if they would have let Dustin come in, just as Dustin Rhodes.
Now yeah, one of my Dust. Buddies. That was what he was like. Like, how many people do you think interfere, or who do you think interferes? And he sent me a GIF of Gold Dust, and I'm like, yeah, maybe.
I wouldn't have done that. I would have wanted if I was Cody, and it was possible, I would have wanted my brother to be there because
maybe have him come in on a fucking flatback. Uncensored. One person maybe got that joke that's watching.
No, I got it. No one that's watching. Yeah. Jeez, that was a terrible match.
That was amazing. It was dopey company.
RoboCop. That's all I have to say.
Sure thing.
He tore the door off the cage.
By the way, people watching this, like, maybe just watching because like, they wanted to watch me or whatever. They just like whatever on Twitter. Like, this is what happens when two wrestling fans just fucking gab for an hour.
Yeah. But his brother Dustin should have come in dressed, you know, just in a flannel and jeans, just like his dad.
And cowboy boots.
And just in cowboy boots and just done the flip flop and fly and hitting him in the head with the elbow. And that would have made it, that would have been the only way it would have been better is if Dusty was still alive.
I'm with you, but I would have wanted, because I'm me, and did I mention I watched Effie's Big Gay Brunch earlier in the day?
I wanted Dustin
in full Gold Dust regalia. Just
no
with the falling gold and everything, you know.
Okay, I can, if they did the full entrance and he came out like that.
Could you imagine? In the full fucking stadium of that?
Yeah, they would have, people would have gone nuts.
They would have.
And I wouldn't even say do the gimmick. I would just say run out, bust somebody's head, and run back, you know, and take a powder and watch your brother win. You know.
Could you imagine if he'd come out and done the Joey Ryan dick spot? Because he's Goldust.
I would not be on this show right now.
You'd be in the woods living deliberately.
Yeah.
So Cody wins. And for people that may or may not remember this, may or may not know this, when Bret Hart ended our war with Japan, and I don't mean World War II, I mean in 1994. Hey, Ronnie, remember Japan bashing? And I remember that was the thing. Like fucking people hitting Toyotas with bats.
Sure do.
So kinda, anywho.
Kind of uncomfortable right now.
So WWE being editorializing our problems with Japan at the time. Yeah, Bret Hart wins the title at WrestleMania 10, and everyone puts him on his shoulder, and it was like, it was a moment. Good, yeah, bad, or indifferent, and I didn't love this era of wrestling, but it was very much like, the Hogan era is gone. Long live the king. And Bret Hart was the king for 5 minutes. And
so they realized it was Bret Hart, and they were like, oh. Ugh.
30 years later, Cody on everyone's shoulders. It's the Triple H era. Triple H got to start off WrestleMania by doing the Vince thing of, hey, welcome to WrestleMania and all that. You know, and it was a moment as a wrestling fan that I won't soon forget, because it very much symbolized the king is dead. Long live the king.
Long live the king.
You know, Vince is gone and he's gone forever now. Then he'll never come back. Not after being accused of fucking sex trafficking.
Trafficking. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't even get to be convicted of it. You just get to be accused of it and you're done. And then, in this country, especially now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to go into the woods to live deliberately and die. That's what happens to you. So he's never coming back. This company is finally rid of him. And I do mean that. I fucking hate.
And like, he oppressed them.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like, the latter half of 20 years, he was an oppressive presence in the back, you know.
WWE felt like Mordor. Yeah. Complete with unbreathable air.
There were certain guys who could breathe, but even they felt it, like Undertaker. Undertaker could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah, I mean, one guy could breathe. It was Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, true. And then Brock Lesnar came in and stole everyone's air.
Yeah. Like Spaceballs.
Yeah. Came with that giant vacuum. Sucked the entire atmosphere.
I don't know if everyone knows this, but Brock Lesnar is Mega Made. Anywho.
So, Taker has always been the locker room leader. I mean, he worked his way up to it, and he's the one that kept the peace, and he was a Vince guy. I was afraid he was going to be accused of anything, but seems like he kept his nose clean, stayed out of that stuff, and just did what the boss said. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
Just
I mean, took Taker care was of a guys company guy.
He was a company guy, yeah.
Yeah. So, my point with all of this being, like, with Vince gone and Triple H being, you know, for the boys, but also for the business, and, you know, the right combination of both, seemingly, I mean, from his point of view. But the whole show feeling like this was by the fans, for the fans, for the first time in 10 years, and I mean that, there hasn't been a good WrestleMania. There's been okay. Years. Yeah, there hasn't been a WrestleMania that felt like the Daniel Bryan win in 10 years. And this tops that for me in that it's more monumental. It's more, you know, business changing in that sense. Like, we are for the first time in 40 years in an age without Vince. And that's worth saying out loud. How important it is.
Worth celebrating, actually, to be honest with you, because of how the last 10 years have gone, you know, or the last, I dare say, since the Attitude Era. I mean, I look back on it, and the matches were great. The content was, you know, but the skits or whatever you want to call the stuff were garbage. I mean, it's like, hey, we have these semi-talented wrestlers, women wrestlers, and then you have some really, like, Ivory.
Austin Theory and Austin Theory is like the one guy that got out of whatever the name of that stupid company was that they bought. And, you know, he goes to NXT and he's the bright shining star of NXT, and he goes on the main roster and he's fucking around with a Fabergé egg.
Yeah.
Like, just gagging with a spoon.
I mean, it's just like, you know, they take, okay, here's what we want to do. Well, that's okay, you can do that, but take the women and make them bark like dogs, and then
don't shit on the bark like a dog thing. We all love that.
That was I was legitimately uncomfortable with that.
Oh, Ronnie, you're so adorable. The rest of us, red blooded misogynist men, were like, yeah, make a bark like a dog, all just naked eating popcorn. It was great.
I was uncomfortable with it. I was just like, why is this happening? Where is wrestling?
Not another single man was. Not one, Ronnie.
The women are, like, just hot. You know, I get it. You know, whatever. But it was just... But
as an aside, so make Trish bark like a dog, and then, like, a month later, fucking Linda McMahon just nutshots him.
Yeah.
Yay! Women are free again!
And then they're not, because it's Vince, you know. Yeah. And then we poop on them, and they're like, you know, what is wrong with you? You know,
Vince McMahon, has anyone seen my daughter's tits lately? Vince,
yeah,
talking.
Hey, what's it? Who'd she? Not Vince Russo, but the guy that came from WCW. Well, I can't remember his name. Bischoff. Hey, Eric, you want to make out with my daughter this week?
I mean, who doesn't? Anywho,
I mean, it was the Halloween where she's dressed like a witch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is happening? But
so anyway. I really enjoyed this WrestleMania weekend. I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of the NXT. I got to see the Trick Williams match, and my favorite thing about Trick Williams is an entire crowd chanting "Whoop that Trick," because that's fantastic.
Yeah,
hustle and flow, baby, hustle and flow. I'll give you the last word. You know, uninterrupted. I promise.
Oh, you're fine, man. That's where I expect you to come in and go, anyway, let's go. Oh, God. How did you get in my house?
Yeah, I think it's on the screen.
Best honestly the best WWE stuff I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They've dropped the stupid superstar in sports entertainment, and they actually said, "I love pro wrestling" on TV.
Michael Cole could not have sounded any happier.
I know. I mean, I just wanted to hug him and like say, "They're there. You're safe now."
Fucking Munchkins are all coming out because the fucking house landed on the east.
Yeah, it's
fucking Triple H and Cody Rhodes come out wherever you are and meet the young Cody that fell from the stars.
Yes, Dorothy.
Yes, and please, everyone, if you get nothing from this podcast, I want you to think of Triple H in the Wicked Witch of the North outfit, and Cody's skipping around in a plaid black, blue and white dress.
I'm Triple H, the Good Witch of the North. And he comes down in a freaking bubble that's tinted green, and he's just like crotch chopping the entire time. Oh, gosh.
It's not getting any better than that.
Do a pair of $10,000 like alligator shoes roll up underneath the ring. The
can
we talk real quick about the Prime bottle in the middle of the ring and the Dude Wipes logo on the side of it? What is happening there? It's not like they need the money. But anyway, best WWE content I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
They honestly, it's just freedom. It feels like a fresh breath air. A breath of fresh air. It feels like everyone is like literally breathing easier. Just like, you mean we can just go out and wrestle? Yeah, have a good time. You know, it's even going to the point where, you know, you hear the foul language on there. Mm-hmm. Not that that's something, but it's just like, you know, if you said darn, you got a $10,000 fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had to be PG and you had to do it exactly the way Vince wanted it to.
Yeah, you had to be PG unless you were a racial stereotype, and then you had to be a minstrel.
Yeah, that's true.
To which I say, poor Booker T.
Yeah, love his heart, man. He's so talented.
Use the phrase "bless his heart" very, very much because I'm not a Southerner. But
yeah,
bless his heart.
Yeah,
that poor man.
There's two different kinds of bless his heart. I was using the good one, and you were too. It felt good to watch.
Yeah.
It's not like I sat down just going, it's WrestleMania. And then I was like, oh no, this is WrestleMania. This is good. This is good stuff. And so I was really impressed and I appreciated it, man. I mean, like you said, the king is dead. Long live the king. This is the Triple H era. This is the Paul Levesque era. And I hope it goes on for a long time. Dare I say, we might even start seeing color on TV every once in a while. You know, I don't want it to be a bloodbath. I don't want it to be...
Maybe when they go to Netflix and it doesn't matter anymore, because that was always a USA call.
Oh, was it? Okay, yeah. I didn't know that. But now, maybe, you know, you'll see a little blood on the pay-per-view. You know, give it a little more drama. It's just like when they busted up with Cody on Raw. Like, I was like, oh no, clutch the pearls, you know?
They just can't go full like Evil Dead.
Yeah,
which like let's
anyway.
Let's have some sense of control here.
Like I'm not talking full ECWs. Well, ECW really didn't do that too much. I mean, they did. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. CZW Combat Zone Wrestling.
No one's gonna get attacked with a fucking weed whacker either. WWE right. Television,
which is where Dean Ambrose got his start, though. But And Seth Rollins, to be honest with you, one of the few places. But it's just like it's going back to what I know is wrestling. I started watching wrestling with my grandfather. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was a Dusty Rhodes guy, a Ric Flair guy. He was, you know, Harley Race. He introduced me to all the classics, you know. And I'm not as sold that I watched them live, but he told me about these matches, and then. You know, when Dusty came into WWF and, you know, the polka dots, even my grandfather was just kind of like, you know. Whatever.
If you walk into a play party full of perverts and go, The Rock says, someone will inevitably answer, know your damn role and shut your mouth.
Yeah.
If you walk into a pool full of naked people playing volleyball and go, what you going to do? And someone's going to answer,
brother,
brother, when the largest arms in the world run wild on you.
Yeah.
You know, what I'm making.
Somebody's going to do the ear thing. Somebody's going to do the ear thing.
What I'm making light of in my own stupid way is wrestling is one of those things that has been around so long and it has so many fans in and out of it that you can walk into any group of people and find another wrestling fan. It's like the one thing that you, it's one of the few things in the culture, in American culture especially, that unites disparate people. You know, so Ronnie is this, you know, redneck, southern, fundamentalist Christian person from the deep south. And I am a bagel-loving New York Jew, atheist commie. And the thing that brings us together in brotherhood is our love of wrestling.
What?
That might have been an exaggeration.
Yeah, very much is an exaggeration.
All right.
I'm not a redneck.
I think the rest of it was okay. All right, folks. Fine. That is our Whiskey Rebellion WrestleMania weekend conversation. We had conversation and discourse tonight, Ronnie Adams.
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Tomorrow, tomorrow I will be at a concert. I'll be at Windrose and Xandria. I don't know if you know who Windrose is, but it's the guys who dress up as dwarves in the Lord of the Rings and sing power metal. Yeah.
God, I'm so jealous of some of the concerts you go to.
Go when you're done here.
Actually, I've seen them. I'm jealous of this concert. Yeah. Some of your concerts terrify me.
Sure. I mean, who doesn't get terrified of Goat Whore? Goat Whore!
That's not a real bands up.
I knew it. Like, that's not a real bit, but it is.
Not a real band. I can't live in a world
where that is a real band. Okay. But you're jealous of this one. Why exactly in 50 words or less?
I just want to see a bunch of guys dressed up like Lord of the Rings dwarves and sing metal.
It's a diggy dig. By the way, my kids are now into that song. Diggy diggy hole. I am a dwarf and I'm digging a hole. Like, we were singing it at dinner tonight. Because that's how we are in my house.
Yeah.
And then, so that's tomorrow. But Wednesday, we are back. And we are doing a Metal Hammer of Doom jukebox. We are reviewing Aelstorm, Voyage of the Dead Marauder, the new EP. But more importantly than all of that, Jesse Starcher has been leading the revolution for Skynet. He is all about the artificial intelligence, and he prompted an entire album because he loves playing with this stuff. So God bless him, Jesse Starcher, an artist among men, a soulful individual. He prompted with the use of ChatGPT and Suno AI a album called Time to Eat. And we are going to review Time to Eat track by track, old school Metal Hammer of Doom style. I can't wait. We'll do that. We'll play some videos.
If I may have one moment to address Jesse.
Yes.
Jesse, I love you like a brother. And I think the world of you. And I don't know, like, you've helped me out a lot with, you know, the Screaming Boy. And you know, I love you, dude. But you keep messing around with this. I'm taking you out.
Okay.
You're not bringing the AI revolution into this world.
Jesse and I are going to be the first people to join Skynet side.
On the list because of the stuff that you post about AI and robot lovers.
And sex robots, yep.
Yeah. You've been on the list for a while. I love you to death. But
here lies Mark Ratledge, loving father, also sex robots. That's what I want on my tombstone. I am pro-sex robot. We all know this. And Jesse is just pro-robot revolution.
Yeah, pretty much.
Join the right side, Ronnie. Abandon the humans. There's no hope for them. The future is in artificial intelligence.
Never. I consider me your John Connor.
That's the Metal Hammer of Doom jukebox. That's Wednesday because I'll be out Tuesday. And then we have a triple feature this Thursday. We are returning to the world of cinema. This time we are doing three independent movies, Waking Life, Run Lola Run, and Marriage Story, which did not make me cry like I thought it would. Next week, the Damn You Hollywood is back. We will have on Chris Owens from Movies That Suck and Some That Don't. and we will be reviewing Civil War, which is getting really good reviews. This is one of the few redos we've done from the Long Road to Ruin era, because we only did half of it back then, and I did it with somebody I probably shouldn't have. So we're gonna forget that ever happened. And Sean and I are gonna do all four Lethal Weapon movies. Ronnie is threatening to host a show of his own. He'll be reviewing Fallout, which, by the way, Andrew Orozco from Geek News Network wants to do the Fallout show if you need somebody. Just FYI.
Who that?
Andrew Orozco from Geek News Network. I can introduce you if I need to. All right. If you don't have anybody. And then, if you liked Ronnie Adams, like I know you do, he and Pat Mullen will be back to have fun, because we're having fun this year on the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network. And the fun show we're doing a week from Thursday is a triple feature: The Substitute, The Principal, and 187, yo. Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast. Show us where you piss from.
Oh, man, I don't know why.
Because you love me, that's why.
Yeah.
Do your plugs.
Obviously, at the bottom of the screen here, it says RonnieTwitch.tv/MisfitsAndMiscreants. We will be back in roughly 3, maybe 4 weeks of preparation planning. And we're going to do a live stream. We're going to have some role-playing and Magic the Gathering content. I have a team behind me that is awesome, and they are supporting me 100% in this. And we're going to start putting some content on the board and making sure that we have a wonderful game. I'm going to be honest with you. The game that we play is for us, and I just want to show off these people who are learning to play and that know how to play and know how to role play. Whether you like it or not, I don't care. I mean, like, I do care, but I don't. It's going to be a lot of fun for us, and in turn, it'll be a lot of fun for you. I know it will be. But I say that saying this is just us playing a game. It's us playing Dungeons & Dragons, and we'll have one-shots of other game systems in there as well. You know, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I am so excited. It's coming up. I've been telling y'all that my stream is starting back soon. It really is. It really is. And I'm excited for it.
We're glad your stream is strong.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening to our Ronnie and Mark good old fashioned mess around here on the Whiskey Rebellion 2.0. We will do another one of these Whiskey Rebellions soon. We'll figure out what topic that's going to be, what B is in Ronnie's bonnet. Maybe we'll just do an assorted story show. Do a stack of an old Rush Limbaugh style stack of stuff.
I dare say that was also a tactic of they who shall not be named.
Yes.
You already named them during this show.
Yes,
the Casual list. Heroes, the yep. list.
The list.
We've done some lists on Screaming Boy too.
Yep.
Until right, I realized folks. That we kind of lifted that from you all and we stopped.
Perfect. All right, folks. Thank you for joining us here in the Whiskey Rebellion. He's Ronnie. I'm Mark. Be well, be safe, and behave.